Okay, my name's Larry Byrne. I've been with Monolithic for, 24 years now. Started with them in Idaho, moved to California with them, moved here with them. We've been here in Texas for 18 years now. My background is an Idaho cattle ranch. I later went to University of Idaho and got a degree in architecture. Never been licensed in architecture. I went to the Air Force after I got out of school. When I came back, they were laying off more apprentice architects than they were hiring. So I went back and ran the family cattle ranch for about 13 years. That's about, couldn't afford to lose any more money. Started looking for other things and got hooked up with David South and Monolithic Dome Institute. Everybody here mostly interested in houses or big domes or businesses or what? Houses? Okay, big domes. How big are domes? 200 footers, 300 footers, for storage or for churches, schools, what?
Arenas.
For what? Arenas? Okay, we'll cover that a little bit. Most of the stuff I talk about today in this session will be concerning house-sized domes. That could be houses, small businesses, churches, some of that kind of stuff. We'll talk a little bit about the arenas and the bigger domes. First, we want to talk about the basics of the monolithic dome. What makes a monolithic dome? There are three technologies, primary technologies used in the monolithic dome. One is thin shell concrete. And I sometimes get asked, okay, how thick does it have to be for it's no longer thin shell design? And the answer to that is it doesn't have anything really to do with the thickness, it's the shape. If we take this concrete and put it in the shape of a dome, we've got double curve, we've got a dome shape, becomes like the shell of an egg, which is pretty tough for its thickness. But what thin shell concrete design means then is that the shape adds to the strength of the structure. It can also apply to what they call folded plates, where they take slabs of concrete and tip them up one after the other to form a roof, and various other structures that do that. And it means that instead of a very deep, heavy beam or slab to cover an area, you've taken this shape, which adds to the strength. It's either, in our case, it's a dome. In other cases, it's different things. The other technology that we use to make a monolithic dome is airforming. We used to make them the hard way. Old domes in antiquity were made by massive scaffolding that they'd stand up and work off of to make domes, to hold things up while they got the concrete solid and that type of thing. Later on, and I'll have some slides here in a little bit to show you one of the first ones that Dr. Wilson was involved with, where they mounted up dirt, poured the concrete on it, and then you had to remove all that dirt out from inside the dome. So by being able to airform it, inflate a balloon, if you will, we call them airforms, and you have different weights, different thicknesses, but by inflating that and spraying shotcrete on the inside of the airform, it saves a lot of labor and goes a lot faster than those where we have to build a mound of dirt and cover it and then remove the dirt. A third technology comes in the form of using the urethane foam for our insulation that we next spray on the inside of that airform. So like David was mentioning, we build buildings backwards. We put up what's going to be your outside roof structure first. Then we spray on the insulation. Then we attach our rebar grid to that. Then we spray the concrete, which is your structural component. So we basically build buildings backwards. What we're going to start with here is some of the shapes and the conversation about round, elliptical, that type of thing. So we'll get with that if I can get my cursor back where it needs to be. The circle is the most efficient two-dimensional shape. By that, I mean we enclose more area, square footage, square inches, whatever, with the least amount of circumference of any other shape that you can design. That is also, when you turn that into a three-dimensional shape, that is the most efficient three-dimensional shape you can design as a sphere, meaning that it encloses more volume than any other shape in comparison with the surface area that you've surrounded it with. And when we build the monolithic dome, we can build any portion of that sphere. If we cut it in half, say we're building a house or a small church or something, we'll have a round, circular footprint, floor plan. We'll have a half circle from the side view. Okay? Then, if we want to farther than I'm supposed to. This is the third computer I've had since I last made this presentation. And it operates different than the other ones. We can build any portion of that. If we want to not have so much surface area to build, which is expensive because that's what you're building, the concrete, the foam, the airform, we can take the top portion of it. For example, if we're building a 40-foot diameter home, this dimension can be 40 foot, or that half circle can be a 40-foot dimension, and we regulate the height to get the surface area down. Well, what's the matter with this shape then? You bump your head before you get too close to the edge. Probably want to get a little closer than that. So you gotta compromise and fit, make it fit what you want to do. You can build more than a half circle. You can come past the bottom. We have built total spheres. The main one I can think of is on a mountain up in Wyoming. It's a water tank. Now, if you build a total sphere, you have to put in a base of concrete to cradle it, or it's going to roll down the mountain on you, or whatever. But we have built total spheres. But we can also build elliptical shapes or oval shapes. Now, as soon as you go to that, you lose some of your efficiency. It takes more circumference to enclose the same amount of space, but they can be built. You've got a long axis and a short axis. You put it into a 3D shape. Still works. We can build any portion of that three-dimensional object. Now, there's two types of ellipsoids. One is called oblate. That's where we take this shape and we're going to rotate it around the short axis. So when we do that, We rotate it around that short axis. We come up with a circular footprint, and we come up with a side view that is elliptical versus spherical. And that's from any side, any direction. And if my slides are still in order, yeah. If we rotate it around the long axis, then if we lay it down on its side, and the best visualization I can think of for that is you take a watermelon. You slice it lengthways in half and put it down. That's what your building's going to be like. You'll have a footprint that is the elliptical shape, and you will have, from the side view, you'll have the half of the ellipse still, but from the end view, you'll have a circle. Or you can tip that watermelon up and cut it in half that way, and we can build a tall dome that's a half of an ellipse. So the first thing you want to do when you're talking about building a monolithic dome is decide the shape that you need. Now, whenever possible, we recommend you stay with circular shape. It's more efficient. But it's more efficient overall. But if you only need a single-story house, and you want it 40 foot in diameter, you don't need it to be 20 foot high. And by going elliptical, you reduce the total amount of surface area that you're building. You still got a round footprint. If you want to build a house or a building that has the oval shape on the ground, many people do, but it's because they like the shape. They like the looks of it on the paper. When you get the dome built, you will never see that oval shape unless you fly over. From the outside, you'll see a dome, just the same as if it were round. Now, you may have a piece of property that is long and narrow. In order to get more use out of it, you may want to go to that shape. You may have an interior design that makes better use of a long shape like that. But in general, you're better off to stick with parts of a sphere or an oblate ellipse. This is the oblate ellipse. Those first two pictures indicated the prolate, which is revolving that shape around the long axis. This is the oblate, where we revolve it around the short axis. Now, we have some limitations when we go to elliptical. If we get this too flat, then we have a problem. If we call the semi-major axis A, the semi-minor axis B, then we don't want to go to a ratio where A equals, it needs to be no more than equal to or less than 1.4 times B. So if we're doing a 40-foot dome and you figure it out, it comes out to be 12 and a half feet or something, and you don't want to go lower than that. Anybody got an idea why that would be?
Structural integrity.
Okay. In the big domes, that's definitely a consideration. When we start talking about stadiums, we start talking about large storage buildings, 200, 300 foot, we don't do the elliptical. There are limitations in both the air forming and in the thin shell technology. In the air forming, those limitations are primarily for the houses and smaller buildings. And the reason is because your air pressure, when you put it to it, is trying to make it go round. It's trying to push it up here, and it's trying to pull it in from the sides. And the tension in the skin is proportionate to the radius of the thing. And in an ellipse, this radius, it's a shorter line here, but this portion of the dome has a center point way down here if you made it into an arc. And the radius gets very high. So the stronger the radius, the bigger the radius is, the more stress it is on the skin. So it's pushing up there. Down in this part of the dome, we have a very short radius of curvature because it's changing all the way along that line. For illustration, if you think of these Mylar balloons that they make for birthday balloons and stuff, that's two round circles of Mylar. They're welded together around the edge. They're inflated. What happens around the edge? It wrinkles like crazy. It crimps together. Well, that's what it's trying to do to this airform. And when you get this number to where it's bigger than that, in comparison with B, the skin stress in this area goes to zero or goes negative. And when it does that, it sucks the sides of your airform in and makes it pumpkin-shaped. So in the smaller domes, you are limited to how flat you can go with the ellipse due to the airforming. When you're talking about very large domes, you also have to be aware of that, but you also have to be aware of this flat area up in the middle here. The strength of the dome comes in that dome shape. When you get that out there to where it's too wide and you're building a bigger building, which takes thicker concrete, you will reach a point where the weight of the concrete overpowers that shape. And you get what the engineers will talk about as snap-through buckling. And it'll drop a bunch of concrete on you in a hurry if you do that. So we stay totally away from doing elliptical in large domes. Now I say totally away. Under very special circumstances, occasionally we will have one where we really need some more width in this area and not up there, and we will take an elliptical shape up so high, and then from there over we'll do a spherical shape added to it. Now there's one other thing when we talk about bigger domes. The radius of the overall circle is called the radius of curvature. You got a circle. If we want a 40-foot dome that's slow profile, you'll cut this circle off up here. If you want a 40-foot dome that's high profile, you cut it off here. If we cut it off here, our radius that we talk about on the ground is from the center over, along this line. That'll be the radius of your house or your church or whatever. But the radius of curvature for one that's cut off here, the center's going to be clear down here, not at your floor line. So that overall radius of the sphere that you're building is going to be the radius of curvature. And we don't build over 170-foot radius of curvature, which means if you're building a half sphere, you can build one that's 340-foot in diameter at the base and 170-foot tall. But if you go over that, then there gets to be just the costs go up to where you can't really do it. So then we go to what we call crenosphere technology, where we have to restrain the airform. Originally, the reason for that 170 foot was the fabrics that we made our airforms out of. They weren't strong enough. I told you that the tension in the skin is a function of the radius. So if you get over that 170 foot, our heaviest fabrics from the past would rip open on you. So you got a problem. Now, since then, they have developed heavier and stronger fabrics to where in the airform technology and the skin, the airforms, we could go higher than that. But when you run the engineering calculations, if you're going higher than that, you end up with so much more concrete down here in the base, where we call the ring beam that holds it all together at the base. The concrete and the steel that has to go in that base gets so heavy, so massive, that the price goes beyond what we like to see. So then we go to crenosphere technology, which means we put a cable system down over the dome, both this way and around this way. And what that does, when you bring the air form up tight against those cables, that keeps it from breaking it open. It also forms a small dome with a low radius of curvature in between every one of those segments. So you can inflate it, put it together, spray it up, and we spray where those cables are first. We spray in a grid of beams. Some of them on huge domes may be 3 or 4 feet thick and 2 feet wide up where those cables are. And we form a grid like that, and then in between them we put in 4 inches of concrete. So that's what you do when you get to a very large dome. So far we have not, we've experimented with scale models of the cabling system, but we've not yet built a crinosphere. We're waiting for one of you guys to want one that big. The cables stay in place. They can stay in place. There's that radius of curvature. Our thought is that in most cases you'll want to leave the cables in. The idea when we first designed it is that you can take them out, and I think you can. But this fabric is going to be stretched down into that groove that's made by the cable. And over time, it may pull loose in the bottom of that groove and give you some weird looking. It won't make a distinctive mark like you'll have on the building to start with. So, and to take the cables off and reuse them would be pretty difficult, because the next guy isn't going to want his dome the same size as the one you just did, so you got to do a whole different set of cables and everything anyway. So the idea is that we leave the cables in place and make it an element of aesthetics for the dome. Okay, can we hook domes together? Yeah, you've seen pictures this morning of 3 and 4 domes hooked together. You overlap them. You make one air form, and it goes from there to there and around. Where they overlap from here to here forms an arch. Your dome's coming down, and then there's an arch between this dome and that dome, which can be used quite effectively. The thing you have to do is pay attention to getting that arch big enough. Looking at it from the outside, this will be the top of your arch, and these will be the two sides. And when you draw that arch, you want it to be high enough. You don't want it down here. You want it to be high enough you can walk through or put a doorway in or whatever you're going to do. So you have to pay a little bit of attention to that, because the airform doesn't care whether it's way out here and you've got just a little bit of overlap, or whether it's way out here and you've got great big overlaps. Yeah, it supports itself. This area right here gets thicker, and it has rebar that comes over the top of that in a pattern, and it also has rebar 4 or 5 foot pieces that run this way through that arch. But it's all put together, it's all inflated in one air form, and then goes on. See, you've got one. Now, we found out on my house. My house is made of elliptical domes. The center one is 40 foot diameter, 16 foot high. One end one is 32 diameter, 13 high. The other end is 30 diameter, 12 foot high. So they're ellipsized. And we tried to design it where the thing just came down to a point, like on the last two drawings. Well, when you join two spherical arch segments together, they fit right together fine. They form a nice spherical arch, and they form in a straight line. So you can do that. As soon as you go to elliptical domes overlapping each other, if you cut a slice down through that elliptical dome, or let me say it this way, if you impose a circular shape on that elliptical dome, and we can't inflate an elliptical arch, that has to be circular shape. So if you impose a circular shape on there, and then look at where it runs, looking at it from the side, it swings out this way, and then it comes back this way. And when you try and mesh those, they don't meet. So we have to do what we call a collar, saddle piece. that fits in between them. And out on the edge, where it connects to the domes, this will be a spherical or a circular shape, arch out there. But it will have a top shape that doesn't go straight down. It curves here and curves here. Now, you have to be a little careful when we're doing that, too. If we get into this, we can design this. We can design this airform. We can make these great big arcs. This is about a 20-foot radius if we're talking about 40-foot domes. Yeah, right here on the chair. But we don't recommend that you do this unless you have special reasons, special things for it. For example, if we were to make a house out of this, most people that would design their house this way would put a living room, kitchen, or living room and great room, family room, whatever, on this side, maybe one bedroom, master bedroom or something. Over on the other end, they'd put three or four bedrooms and some bathrooms. But they would want to put their kitchen here in the middle. Well, when you've got this reverse arch going all the way up over the top, it's very difficult to put windows in those or doors. And it's hard enough to put regular cabinetry up against the dome wall. But when you got that reverse curve and the arch coming over, it's almost impossible to fit your cabinetry into that area. So it becomes kind of unusable. So that's why we prefer to have these narrower saddles. This just shows the one, but I have two saddles on mine. Now, you can hook more than two together. You can do this. You've got an arch here and an arch there. Guess I better pay attention to time a little too. Okay, I got time. You can do that. And when we talk about our training center, it's kind of like this. It has four domes hooked together, similar pattern. And there were some people that came through that training center and says, okay, we like the size of the domes you had. They were 32-footers. They're hooked in four, like the previous thing. But we don't need 2,600 square feet. We would like to hook three of them together. So they says, let's do it this way. Well, at the time, we'd never drawn it up or thought much about it. We said, sure. We laid it out, laid a house out in it. Then we got to looking at it and had to go back to them and say, okay, we got a problem. Here's one arch. Here's the second arch. Here's the third arch. Right there where they all meet is at a point about that high off the ground. So that in itself causes a little bit of problem. But we could build it. That's what you want it to look like. That's what it would inflate like if you put the air pressure to it. Where those three arches meet would go up the other way with the air pressure. Now, can we do it? Yeah, we can build the airform. And we could take that peak and we can tie a strap on it and anchor it down to the floor and hold it down. But you had that thing that's all surrounded by the other domes. It's going to fill up with water. So that presents another problem. Now, we had a guy that did that, and he connected several small domes around a larger dome and overlapped the three, and he had that situation in the middle. He tied it down. He put a drain in the footing under where he tied it down so he could. And when we got it all built, he cut that off, put a pipe in it, connected it to the footing drain at each one of those points. And he had a rather good-sized meeting room. And then where those pipes went down, he covered them with material and made it look like a column on an old arched building with columns all the way around there. So he's got this one central dome and individual domes off to the side of it that you enter through columns and arches. And worked out pretty nice. So if you plan for it, you can do those kind of things. But we try to avoid them in general. We can do different sizes, hook them together different ways. We can put stem walls on these domes. If you're doing a single dome, you can come straight down in the air form, down to the ground. It'll inflate just like this, do fine. We talk about stem walls on domes. This one's going to the next subject. But most people, when you talk about stem walls, okay, we want an 8-foot wall and we want a dome roof that's this shape. It's low, like that. You can't do that in the air form. Same principle as with the ellipse that wrinkles around the thing. The air pressure is going to try and make it go up, and if this is just air form, it's going to wrinkle like crazy around that spot, and it's going to make the dome take a weird shape. You can do it as long as you have a half of a sphere or a half of an ellipsoid, so that it's already coming vertical as it starts into that stem wall. Then it'll inflate just fine. We build a number of those. If you get very big domes, you don't want that half sphere on top of it, if it's a church or something like that. So what you do then is build the wall first and put your airform at the top of the wall. And we have a lot of pictures of those different things. What are we doing? Going backwards, huh? Openings in domes. This is called an augment. You decide what shape of door or window you want, mount it right out here on the edge of the circle, and we build a collar that fits into it. Looking at it from the side, it looks like that. From the front, it looks like that. From the top, it looks like this. So that's one way. Okay, you'll probably see that at any of David's slides that you happen to go to one of his things. That's his favorite cartoon. But this is what they look like. Can you see that? We need the lights down. That's an inflated airform for a multiple dome. We used to have patterns. We'd go so far because the fabric is only 56 inches wide, and it has to be cut in an arch, and then you have to stop and start at the top with one, and then you come down so far and you do two on down and whatnot. But we've learned over time that the waist is enough, that it's better to just start and go clear down the length of the fabric and make more gorge all the way around. But that's what it looks like when you first inflate it. You got your equipment inside, you got plastic on the floor, you got your rebar ends covered so you don't tear it, all kinds of things like that. The next step is spraying on the foam. That's good enough, I think. We don't need it totally dark. Some people may want that'll probably do for the rest of the time. And we put these stickers in the foam. And that's what we're going to tie the rebar to. Here's one that's got the rebar all tied over the foam. You can see each of these augmented openings. No foam on those, on the front face of them. Thanks, Nora. But that's the process. The air form, the foam, the stickers, and then the rebar. And then, of course, you spray the concrete. Now, this is that dome I was talking about, built up in Utah, that Dr. Wilson was involved with. It's, 185 feet long and 74 feet wide. It is elliptical in floor plan. But they mounted up, piled up all that dirt with bulldozers and stuff, shaped the dirt in this shape, had piles of dirt coming down here, poured the concrete over it, and this would have been back in about early 70s. And it's been used for a lot of things. It was originally designed as a skating rink. It later became a wholesale food marketplace, and then something else. And then the piece of property it was sitting on got to be too valuable for housing units, and just last year they proceeded to tear that dome down. And it was a pretty difficult process. This shows that they got the building permits based on the engineering and the design and everything, but when they got ready to start using it, the city says, no, we're not going to give you a certificate of occupancy until you prove that it'll take the weight that you did. So those are pallets of concrete blocks. 360,000 pounds of concrete blocks stacked all over the top of it. Now that dome's 240 by 160 wide. It's a big dome. But they stacked that much concrete blocks on it, and they measured the inside before they did, and they measured it afterwards, and there was less than a quarter inch of deflection anywhere in the dome. So then they said, okay, go ahead and use it. Before you attach the air form, you do your footing. Sometimes you, in bigger buildings, we just do the footing and have this on it, and we pour the floor after it's done. In the smaller sizes, we usually pour the floor and footing together, and then attach the air form and go. This is a dome in Moscow, Russia. Svet Rakoff came to one of our workshops, learned how to build them. It's a 32-foot diameter, and it's on a stem wall built into the airform. It's a two-story that he built for his mother. It's quite a nice little house. If you look close, right up on that point of that pinnacle is a little tiny American flag. But unfortunately, things in Russia, the state came and took his equipment, and he's out of business. Not because he built a dome, because they wanted the equipment to do other things with. That's a 200-foot diameter gymnasium dome out in Payson, Arizona. However high you want. We built one up in Iowa last year that's 300-foot in diameter and 164-foot high. This was a 300-foot half sphere on a 16-foot stem at the base. So you can go with that stem wall however high you feel comfortable building. As long as you've got a half sphere on top, you can do it right in the airform, and it's just the same construction from bottom to top. Recently, we've built a number of churches and schools where we put up a straight wall first, and this one was done that way also. And the airform was put at the top of the poured stem wall. And that's what you have to do if you want a low profile on top of a vertical wall, because you can't do it in the stem wall. But we build those stem walls the same way. We stand up plywood, we put we tie our rebar grid to the plywood or metal. We've done several different things. And then we shoot a concrete wall that's only about 2 to 3 inches thick. And at the top of that, we make our ring beam for the dome skin. We put it on, and then we start from the ground up, just like the whole thing was an airform. Do our foam, clear up from the bottom up over the top. Do our rebar, clear over. And then do our structural wall, which is 6 to 8 inches thick, from the bottom all over the top. And the top of those, it'll only still be 4 to 5 inches thick. But at the base, it might be 8, 10 inches, depending on the size of the dome. The big domes, pretty much, we build ourselves, or David's brother, who has Souths Incorporated, they build them, and David's other brother has Dome Technology out of Idaho Falls, Idaho. We build most of the domes this size.
So between.
We've built in 46 of the states and about 47 foreign countries. All over the world. You can tie into the sides of the dome and stuff in a lot of places for all your edge support, but on these large domes, like for gymnasiums and stuff, the interior is usually red iron put together. They do avoid putting red iron right out here at the edge, because the dome is strong enough you can hook the ends of the beams and whatnot into the dome. But you go very far in and you got to have more supports, and you usually use red iron. Not enough to worry about. If you do it technically and run down through all the calculations, yeah, it will be a little less strong than a pure dome. But since we build it the same way, build that structural wall from the bottom clear over the top and everything. It's still a monolithic dome. It just has a singular curve on the base portion of it. So technically it is slightly weaker than a pure dome. But it's... not really. We can cut arches out in these domes like this, nearly all the way around them, as long as we've got a chunk of it, depending on the size of the dome that comes to the ring beam at the base. And then you have to put extra rebar around those openings. The thing about putting a lot of big openings in a dome is that the biggest detriment to that, or the biggest reason you wouldn't want to do that, is because it reduces your energy efficiency. My time's up. We'll continue on from here in the next session. If you want to stay for this, or if you want to pick up one of the others, that's fine. And
I have a question. When you speak about fabric or the membrane, what is it made of?
It's PVC plastic with a nylon or polyester fabric inside. It's fabric that has been impregnated with PVC plastic. We use anywhere from 22 ounce per cubic or per square yard up to 44 ounce per square yard, depending on how big they are, how much air pressure we have to put on them. PVC plastic, polyethyl chlorine, polyvinyl chloride. Same thing your plumbing pipes are made out of, actually. We try not to put any plumbing in the concrete wall. The electrical, you get the foam on, and then when we start hanging the rebar, the electrician should come in and run his PVC conduit and plastic boxes while we're doing the rebar, and then tape them over, and then come back and pull his wires later, because our guys spraying the dome don't want to quit and wait for him to pull all the wires and stuff. But that's the way it's done. Come up in the slab and take it through the interior walls. For the junction boxes and the outlets and everything, you have plenty of places to pull the wire through. Time to grab a drink or something, and we'll get started with session 2 pretty quick.